Blog Talk Radio.
Well, only in New Mexico do the Dems appear to be picking up any strength. The gentleman that came to talk about the Soil and Water District Board were not successful yesterday. And although the turnout was small, about 5% of the total voters, 70,000 voters, something like 3,500 people voted. The numbers were overwhelming for the left anyway. So kind of interesting. But it was still good to have those guys on yesterday. Let me see if I can get those numbers there for you in a second. There were some votes in New Mexico up north, and which we can go over as well. So, anyway, kind of discouraging news, but the left did get their house back in the state. But I mean, how is that helping the state? If you see what I mean. So I guess the Republican Party or the conservatives, whatever group you want, might want to discuss, is going to need to get a little bit better organized to try to retain the power. And I suppose it goes to some degree as to how the president does, and he seems to be a little bit hit and miss these days. And I mean, obviously they're not passing the healthcare reform right now. They're not passing the healthcare reform, and they're not really necessarily doing a lot of other things such as the wall, but they just passed, or they're going to sign into power, executive order, I believe today, on religious liberty, which I'll get you some information on as well. I did notice that the KRGW, whatever the call letters are to the local university, the studios down there, that the candidates, there were only two candidates, and it was the two that won, Bixby and the other one. So Fenske and Bixby. So that may have been a strategic error, but may not have helped on the other hand either. So anyway, let me get you some national news here. And North Korea claims the detained Americans tried to overthrow the government. I think the guy was just trying to get a poster. I think he was a brilliant student, is the sad thing. U.S. commandos, Kim's nuclear sites, Little Kim. China urges citizens to return home. And ballistic missile test fired from California base as the United States gets ready for potential conflict. Now, interestingly, in France, you've got this situation with Le Pen and Macron. Macron is the political outsider who's actually stands up for the establishment, funny enough. And they say that it's a dead heat between Le Pen, who's on the far right, and Macron. And they're afraid that there's going to be another Brexit, another Trump in France, which would probably be the best thing that could possibly happen for that corrupt country that has been so hammered by political correctness. Before political correctness was even named. Limbaugh pounding Pence, you guys were sent in there to drain the swamp, not build further into it. Now, this is shocking. One in four federal inmates is foreign born. Isn't that just astounding? Stephen Colbert, who I never watch and would never watch out of the sense of principle because I just totally oppose his brand of supposed comedy, he was off the tether and made some very crude and rude comments, some obscene comments about Donald Trump, which undoubtedly will help him with his base. 29 have died in Venezuela protesting the corrupt and totally inefficient and evil government down there, socialists in other words. And Hillary Clinton is on a blame game tour, believe it or not. And wow, that's so amazing. And I've got 10,000 clips this morning, so I'll only be able to get to a select few, but I was busy for hours last night. And so let me take a little break and get some of these clips from the from the local and the state races. But even Brigitte Bardot, the famous sex kitten, is saying don't vote Macron. We'll take a little West Montgomery bumping break here and be back with some New Mexico news. 523-1450 and 805-6180 is your text line. I've got it with me. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 613. All right, so 616, and got some results here for you. And for the, I'm just take me a little bit longer to get to the section on the, well, here we go. For your soil and water conservation district board in zone three, Kevin Bixby, 521 votes, and Joe Delk, 285, so about 2-1. And zone four, Craig Fenske, D. Craig Fenske, 1,812, and Thurston, 841. So Thurston had a good showing for a first timer, but it was swept under. I assume the Progressive Voter Alliance is responsible for most of that. Of the 70,654 eligible voters, about 3,500 voted, which is 5%, which is a high point, but is still described as abysmal by Scott Kraling. So anyway, that's your outcome on that one. Soda tax initiative was rejected. It was a 2 cent per ounce tax on the distribution of sugar sweetened beverages in special elections, and was a new kind of a vote for Santa Fe. 37%, 38% of the voters there turned out. 58% voted no. So 11,500 against the tax, 8,300 in favor, 8,400 in favor. And in the affluent neighborhoods, it was split 50-50. So, and they were going to use that tax for kids, for schools. And let's see what else there is here for you. All right, so I don't, not too much. So anyway, the big news locally was the soil and water conservation and the progressives move their people in. So as the country becomes apparently more conservative or less liberal, New Mexico, which is, can say it's a complete shock, is moving in the opposite direction, becoming more liberal and more progressive. So I can't imagine that that's going to work out well for us, but we'll have to find out the hard way. All right. And why don't we go to a little bit of local news for you. And you're listening to AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450 to call in 805-6180. And man, I have a ton of stories for you. It's unbelievable. An embarrassment of riches, as they say. We'll be right back. 720 Kelly O'Connell. Okay, here's just a little bit on Trump and Putin working together in North Korea, Syria.
President Trump and Russia's Vladimir Putin vowing to take on Syria and North Korea together. The two world leaders speaking on the phone for the first time since U.S. missiles blew up a Syrian airbase last month.
It was a very constructive call that the two presidents had. Very, very fulsome call, a lot of detailed exchanges. So we'll see where we go from here.
President Trump and Putin also agreed to meet face-to-face in July at the G20 summit in Germany.
All right, so I think what's happening now is Trump just said that little Kim was a smart cookie. I think he's doing a little bit of a charm campaign to try to get these guys to back off the saber rattling. In the meantime, Krauthammer explaining that Trump got rolled and ended up with nothing on the budget deal. It was embarrassing. Check this out.
We're always one election from changing things. They controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House.
Trump got rolled. The Republicans got rolled. They ended up with nothing, really. It's sort of embarrassing. I understand the strategic idea. We're halfway through the year, only a few months left. This has all been a good in the past. You save your fire for September when you do next year. That's what they say every time they save their fire, and they don't use it the next time. Now, Trump has been wonderful, I think, in sort of throwing out a lot of ideas, starting with the gas tax. The Kim idea wasn't a great idea, but there's no denying the fact that this was not a win. He was not the winner. He said he was a negotiator. This is a total loss.
All right, so let's just say that's true. I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a showdown over the wall, because that's just Trump's nature. He either gets what he wants or he goes after it, and he's not afraid to fight or to be embarrassed by people attacking him. As a matter of fact, he seems to be his secret strength. Now, here's Limbaugh attacking Trump and Pence for not fighting. Check it out.
IB Network, and we welcome back to the program the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence. Welcome back, sir. Great to have you here with us today.
Rush Limbaugh, it is an honor to be with you always. Thanks for having me on.
If this is what happens, Mr. Vice President, why vote Republican? What is the point of voting Republican if the Democrats are going to continue to win practically 95% of their objectives, such as in this last budget deal?
Well, I'd look respectfully, Rush. I actually think this was, as the president said a little while ago, I think this was actually a clear win for the American people. Look, you've had Washington, D.C. that has been, you know, paralyzed by gridlock and partisan infighting for many years. And in this new president, you have someone who is able to bring people together and make a $21 billion increase in defense spending at a time of great challenge for America's interest around the world. And that's he spoke about that today, surrounded by a lot of great members of the United States Air Force. And there was also a piece here for years, Democrats in Washington insisted that any increase in defense spending would be matched with an increase in domestic spending. So you got to grow government at home if you're going to invest in our national defense. This ended that. I mean, in a very real sense, this was a game changer because we're just back to putting the safety, security, and the national defense of the American people first. And I think it sends, having just traveled around the Asian Pacific representing the president over the last couple of weeks, I think this sends a decisive message to the world that under President Trump's leadership, we're going to make the strongest military in history even stronger.
If I'm the Democrats, $21 billion, $15 billion for defense that was not originally authorized, that's a small price to pay for continuing to fund refugee resettlement, continuing to fund Planned Parenthood, continuing to fund sanctuary cities, continuing to fund the EPA and not build a wall. The Democrats clearly think this is a big win, and they're confident they can block Trump's agenda after this spending bill for the rest of Trump's term. There isn't anything of the president's agenda in this budget, and people are beginning to ask, when's that going to happen? If you're going to shut it down in September, why not now?
Yeah.
If you complain about 60 votes today, why not go budget reconciliation for 51 votes and smoke them?
Let me be real clear. The number one priority of President Trump is to rebuild our military, to restore the arsenal of democracy. And I got to tell you, to get Democrats in Washington, D.C. to agree to a $21 billion increase in a short-term budget bill. And, you know, the president's calling for the largest increase in military spending since the Reagan administration in the upcoming budget. I think it's no small accomplishment. Also, this bill includes the largest increase in border security funding in 10 years, with enough, as the president said, to make a down payment on a border wall. We're replacing ineffective and failing fencing and wall with an unbreakable barrier. We're beginning to build the wall already. And look at the statistics, Raj. Illegal immigration border crossings are down more than 60%.
That's right. The fear factor is working there, no question about it.
Well, it's not fear factor, it's leadership. You have in Secretary Kelly someone who is acting on the president's direction. We are enforcing the laws of this country. We're vigorously removing.
All right, so you get the feel for that. I think that rushes on to something important. Let us take a break. I'm going to come back, and I've got some stuff for you on the violence that has enveloped the Democratic Party and the far left and their need for vengeance for this election. 633 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450 to call in at 805-61802, text on KOBE. 633B, back with the violence on the left. So here is a little bit on the violence, and the reason that I think it's so important to focus on this is that the left has given itself the right to the privilege to be violent, to express themselves. And in the first place, it's not our typical way of doing things. Number two, it is a real expression of this blind desire in leftism for revolution. And it is a danger to every single person in the country to be at the wrong place at the wrong time and have someone lash out with this attack of political rage. And the fact of the matter is, you can claim that Trump doesn't have authority because you say that he doesn't have authority. But what is that based on? You know, I mean, whether you accept him or not, there's a process. Trump went through the process, as did Hillary Clinton, as did a number of other people. He came out on top. Now, appeared to have done so legally. They've not been able to prove anything coming out of Russia. So he's legally elected and he has the authority. So just because everybody on the far left doesn't agree to his authority, that doesn't change anything. But the violence just underscores the basic irrationality of far leftism, in my opinion. Anyway, here's a little bit. Why has the left gotten so violent? From yesterday.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. When the left turn violent? Historically, May Day, which was yesterday, has been a day for labor activism. Yesterday, though, the American left decided somehow to make it about illegal immigration, which ironically lowers the wages of American workers. There was also quite a bit of violence. Take a look at this.
Needless to say, a lot of fighting and a lot of protesting and rioting and burning and breaking cars and windows and such.
25 people were arrested in Portland, Oregon after their march devolved into a riot. There are multiple arrests, meanwhile, in Berkeley, California. All of this raises the question, why are some on the political left so readily embracing violence? In the early days of the Obama administration, there were plenty of Tea Party protests, people dressed in tri-cornered hats. None of those ever turned into a riot. Jose Antonio Vargas is an illegal immigrant. He's also the CEO and founder of Define American, a pro-illegal immigrant organization, and he joins us now on the set. Jose, why the violence? All of us can understand a disagreement over policy, but this is not a fight between left and right. This is the left setting fire, breaking things.
Well, first of all, I am neither from the left nor the right. I don't know if we've talked to all those people who are protesting and asked them if all of them are from the left. I don't really know what that means.
Well, they were people shouting pro-illegal immigration slogans and then setting things on fire. Yes, they're from the left. That's correct.
I know many conservatives and Republicans who believe for immigration reform, for example.
For sure.
We're not talking about immigration.
No, that is absolutely
that they're
true.
Criminals.
None of them were on the street yesterday in Portland or in Paris or in Berkeley. Didn't talk to every one of them. but the ones shouting left-wing slogans are left-wing. And it's of a piece with what we've seen for the past 5 months, where almost all of the political violence, and there's been a lot of it, has been perpetrated by the left in the name of the fight against fascism. And my question is, A, where is this going? And B, what is the justification for this?
Well, first of all, I really take offense to the very simplistic left and right way that you're framing this. I mean, it suits your viewers and Fox News, but it doesn't suit reality. Second of all,
it is reality.
I guarantee you, if you got put this guy in a witness stand and spent enough time on him, he would admit to being a far lefty. Or some sort of a radical anarchist.
Watching on the screen were not people who voted for Trump. There are people who believe that Trump, because they were screaming anti-Trump slogans. That's why. Look, I'm not impugning everyone who's against Trump. I'm merely saying that a subset of the American left is using violence in pursuit of their political aims, and nobody is saying anything about it. They're getting away with it, and people like you who should be denouncing it aren't. And that's the point I make.
First of all, I did not participate in any of the protests. My protest yesterday was, as an undocumented immigrant in this country, one of 11 million who are viewed as criminals, my own way of protesting was just actually very quietly and respectfully thinking about what it means to be an immigrant in that Trump era, right? So that was my way.
Okay, well, thank you for not breaking anything. I'm not accusing you of setting fires. I'm really saying, where are people who agree with these folks standing up and saying, you're not allowed to do it. You can't block traffic. You can't break things. You can't set fires. It's pretty simple.
Well, first of all, I cannot speak for all those people and why they did what they did. What I can tell you is that for many of us, this issue is not just quote unquote political. It's personal. We're talking about millions of people who are related to undocumented people that you call criminal illegals every day. Right. It's not for me. I mean, I remember that.
What should I call people who are here illegally? Should I pretend they're not here illegally?
No, hey, look, you asked me to come on your show pretty much once a week, and I come here as an undocumented person. I'm privileged.
You may be overstating it a little bit. I think it was the third time. But here's the point.
I am here illegally. I am here illegally talking to you as an undocumented, unauthorized person who doesn't have authorization. But I, as a person, am not illegal. But semantics aside,
okay,
right?
So I robbed a liquor store yesterday, which is illegal, but I'm not illegal. I don't even know what the point you're making is. I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm saying your status is in violation of the law.
By the way, I did that. I came out voluntarily. 6 years ago,
right,
just so we can actually tell the truth about this issue, right? Like, to tell the truth and have facts. And to me, I have to say, and kind of the way you're framing this whole conversation right now, it's consistent with thinking of the left or of immigrants as some sort of violent people, when the reality is, like, immigrants in this country actually commit, undocumented immigrants specifically, commit less crime than native-born.
Okay, actually what I was doing was rolling tape from yesterday, just to bring it back to reality,
if I could.
And then pardon my interruption for slowly.
All right, so I'm sure that you heard the report that just came out, and I'll go back to it, is that 1 out of 4 people in federal prison is foreign born. So what does that mean for you? And this is from Polizet.com, published today, actually. Justice Department says cost of incarcerating non-citizens in federal prison exceeds $1.2 billion. But so anyway, I mean, you could listen to that guy all day. You know, I always find it hilarious how these people on the far left pretend that their ideas are beyond the understanding of the average person, and that the people on the right are so idiotic and uneducated, when if you look at leftism and you put all the ideas together, it doesn't occupy a real big space, and is full of cliches and false assumptions and just falsehoods in general, and things that are historically not correct. All right, here is a little bit from Hume on the same show, I guess. Brit Hume.
Well, the embrace of violence on the left didn't start yesterday. It's been clearly visible ever since Trump started running for president close to 2 years ago. His campaign rallies, his inauguration, almost every policy action he's made as president have all been treated as a chance to begin a violent act.
And more of the same, all these pictures of the protests and the violence and the attacks. And it's really, if you think about it, a lot of this is an attack on burning the flag and beating people and setting things on fire, but also breaking the windows in storefronts and doing all kinds of carnage against capitalism, because these people are also anti-capitalist thugs. Now, here's a little bit from Tucker.
What is driving the left's political violence? There's an awful lot of it, and it's worth thinking.
I want to tell you, I'd gone on to Amazon and found every book that I could on Marxism and leftism and ethics, and also I was trying to put an article together on, if I had this idea, you know, you get rid of religion, so you get rid of the Ten Commandments or the rules in religion, and then you have to replace it with something else. So what did these people on the far left believe in? And I read book after book, and I found that they really basically said, there was only one book where the guy came out and said it, is if you're a communist or you're Marxist, you don't believe that anything is always wrong, that anything that you do might be able to further the cause. And he said, including murder. And he wasn't apologetic about it. He wasn't really bragging about it. He just said, that's the fact. And so if you think about this, there's no, you know, typically when people think about violence, there's some spark, there's some cause, a lot of times spontaneous. In these situations, these violent attacks are organized, and the only purpose is to disrupt society, to make it more likely that there will be a revolution of some kind to bring back leftism. Here's Tucker.
About Fox senior political analyst Brit Hume joins us tonight. Brit, you've covered politics for an awful long time. This kind of thing hasn't happened in a while. Is it bigger than it was in the 60s, and where is it going?
Well, it certainly reminds me of the 60s, Tucker, when, you know, the chant of, hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today, was on the lips of demonstrators across the country. We had violence. We had violence in the streets during the famously during the Democratic Convention in 1968. We had violence on college campuses. We had flags burned. We had we had this sort of behavior we're seeing now. But I agree with you that not since then have we seen anything on this scale. And I think it is all about basically two things. One is there was unrest in the Democratic Party when Hillary Clinton won the nomination and wrested it from Bernie Sanders. So you had a none-too-happy cadre within the Democratic Party going into the election. But they all believed, I'm sure, that she would win. And while she wasn't their favorite, she was better than the other person whom they thought and think was unthinkable. And he won, and they haven't been able to get over it. This is all, I think, basically about Trump derangement syndrome and the behavior you're seeing, and not just in the demonstrations, but in the rhetoric of well-known people. It's beyond anything I've seen back in the 60s. It's literally deranged.
But this stuff tends to feed on itself. I mean, just as an argument between people does, as you say things that are increasingly aggressive and crazy, it tends to kind of escalate to the point where you're hitting each other. Is that where we're going? Because nobody seems to be pulling back on the left.
That's the danger. And of course, you have this sort of behavior is goes unpunished in many places, particularly on the campuses today. You know, you had Ann Coulter basically unable to speak at Berkeley because there was sure to be a riot. You had the hideous episode up at Middlebury College in Vermont where Charles Murray was basically shouted down by a mob. For which there has been only the mildest sort of punishment going on up there for those students. So we do have, you know, real intolerance. You had Stephen Colbert in this rant last night on his comedy show on CBS, which was just obscenity studded. It's something, you know, you hear off color cracks on late night shows from time to time, but nothing that I've seen was as unrepeatably vulgar as what I heard last night. These are sort of restraints that are being broken through as we go, and it does make you wonder if we're on a slippery slope toward real violence.
Well, it kind of does.
And enduring violence.
So my question is, what about the leaders, such as they are? Chuck Schumer, for example, whom I don't agree with on anything, but I mean, I think he's a loyal American, and he's certainly a smart guy. Why wouldn't he stand up as the senior Democrat in the Senate and say kind of generally to his people, you're not allowed to block traffic, you can't set things on fire, stop with the violence. This is crazy. Why doesn't he do something like that?
Yeah, let people speak.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Let people speak, right? Well, the Democrats in Congress that we can see day by day, I think, are trying to get synchronized with the mood in the electorate, which is mutinous. And I think they're looking at the attitudes that they're feeling. They're no doubt hearing from their constituents. They're no doubt hearing from pressure groups on the left and the rest of it. That says, don't you dare condone this man and treat him, and what is the one they say, mainstream
normalize him.
Don't you dare pretend that this man isn't some hideous freak. And you know, so the whole attitude, the whole idea of civility in any respect toward this guy is out the window, which is not to say that, you know, they're personally uncivil to him, but the attitude, this whole idea of resisting, which you heard spoken by none other than Hillary Clinton today, indicating that she is now a member of the resistance. Which has been the whole posture of the left since Trump's election, and the Democratic Party is now fully and wholly a part of it.
Well, it's sad because there's a lot of stuff we could do with a new leader in Washington, but these people could not possibly accept. They couldn't possibly accept this. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. I've got one more clip from Gingrich on Trump being the end of the world for leftism. All right, I don't have enough time for that clip, but I do have enough time for Nate Bargatze, comedian.
Yes, thank you, everybody. My name is Nate. I am originally from Tennessee. And, all right. I have a thick accent. I know this because when I meet people and they hear it, they're always like, what's up? Where are you from? I'm like, Tennessee. They're like, oh, that's cool. I have a cousin that lives in Florida. And you're like, all right. Like, I don't even know. Are we just naming states? Is that what's going on right now? Is his name Kevin? Because it's not Kevin. I don't know who it is. And a lot of bicycle riders out here, which is neat. I'm not a bicycle rider. I don't. The reason I stopped is because I became an adult. Like, that was my reason. Which is what I need. I don't know. I saw a guy riding a bike. He was like 40. So I stopped him. I said, what are you doing, buddy? You know, why don't you get your life together? And, yeah. And get a car like the rest of us. And then he got off that bike and beat me senseless. Like, this guy, yeah, this guy was in great shape from riding that bike. And I learned a lot about stamina that day. It was an eventful, exciting day. I'm glad everybody's out tonight. I know the economy is rough. People act like there's going to be another depression, that we have to watch out for that. But there's not going to be another depression. The only reason there was a depression the first time in the 30s was, have you ever seen pictures of the 30s? Yeah, it's like very depressing. yeah, it's all black and white. Like, they didn't have color back then. I have an Xbox. Unless you're going to take my Xbox from me, I'm sure I can muscle through these times. A lot of homeless people out too, and I feel bad seeing homeless people. You see them asleep on the sidewalk, but every time I see a homeless guy and he's asleep, I always notice that they go to bed at a very reasonable hour. Yeah. Let me tell you, it'll be like 8 o'clock. You're like, this guy is going to get a solid 8 hours. You know, I'm going to toss and turn. He'll be to work on time because he works from right there. Like, you don't have to go far. You don't oversleep on a sidewalk. You know, people are stepping over you. Like, that's his snooze alarm. He's like, 9 more people can step over me, and then I will start my day. I will get it going. They sleep unbelievable, too. They sleep great. Like, I've never looked like I was dead when I was in my bed. But homeless people, like, I listen to sounds of the rainforest, you know, or sounds of the ocean. Apparently, I should listen to sounds of the overpass. That would be, yeah, it would just be horn honking and people going, get a job. And you're like, I slept great last night. I slept unbelievable. It was unbelievable. It was great. Good time. I always get home late doing comedy. So I'll go in. I'll fix something to eat. My wife will be asleep. You know, I'll be home for an hour. Then I hear my wife from the bedroom. She'll be like, Nate, is that you? Like, you better hope to God it's me. yeah. You would let some murder get quite comfortable in this house. He is eating. They're going to find your body and be like, this guy watched a whole season of Entourage before he did this. He was relaxed is what he was. Watch a lot of sports. I watch the individual sport. I watch a hot dog eating contest. But they air it on the sports. The first time I saw this contest, you see everybody competing. They would show, like, a lot of skinny people. And they would show a real fat guy. And I was like, well, that guy is going to win. Like, he's practiced. And looks like he's the best at this. But he does not win. He doesn't. Kobayashi. A very in-shape Japanese man. Yeah. That is who wins. That's impressive. Like, that means, like, fat people are not even good at what they're good at. Like.
All right. Thanks for tuning into the first hour. Kelly O'Connell, I'm Las Cruces. We got, I got so many things on the second hour, but I want you to come back. I want you to hear Hillary Clinton's explanation for why she lost. It is just hilarious. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, Kelly O'Connell. All right, I just got a text or some text from somebody, and the political protests are getting violent because they don't have anything to lose anymore. And also talks about Hillary being disgruntled, et cetera. The left wanted Bernie, and so everybody's flipping out. All right, so here's how about a different view on this? And this is from a guy by the name of Stephen Hicks, PhD, a philosopher who's got stephenhicks.org, 2013. Marx's philosophy and the, quote, necessity of violent politics. And he mentions a question was raised in a European journal over why the insistence from the left on violent revolution, because this is one of the hallmarks of leftism, is not just the right, but the necessity of violence. And I've told you that the Marx had stated, and when Engels was at his grave, when Marx died, he said the one thing that was holy to Karl Marx was revolution. And by that, he meant a violent revolution. Now, in 1948, Karl Marx wrote in a newspaper article, there is only one way in which the murderous death agonies of the old society and the bloody birth throes of the new society can be shortened, simplified, and concentrated, and that way is revolutionary terror. Now, if you think about it, it is really extraordinary, and one of the sad things that you will run into is that the people on the left, the farther into the left you go, the more educated people tend to get because they've been steeped in this stuff from the university system and have gotten into it. And so some of these people tend to be very well read within leftism. And so they all buy into this. And that's why the Harry Reids and the Nancy Pelosi, that's why if you cut any of these people, they would all bleed Karl Marx. And I'm not saying that Nancy Pelosi is any kind of a great thinker, but the fact is that there is what Aristotle talked about was a natural movement of all bodies, of all animals, of all ideas, and this telos, and there's a natural movement within Marxism towards tyranny and violent overthrow and tyranny. And you just got to put that in the back of your mind when you're trying to understand these people. It's not an accident. The violence is not an accident. It is it's the essential nature of what they're up to. And so one of the things he points out is these people really don't have the patience for a studied overtake. They don't have the organization and the study. But instead, and this is more Marxist leftism, Marx did not believe in waiting, and he didn't believe in human nature either. He believed in a violent overthrow of society so that the society could be put into order and Marxist or socialist communist ideals could be brought in. So believe it or not, even though the Iron Curtain was destroyed decades ago, we're still fighting with this stuff, and we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Good morning, Aaron. Hope you're well, and what's on your mind?
Well, I think in reference to the whole idea of violent takeover, I think the first step that they have to accomplish, which thank goodness they haven't been able to, is to disarm us. It's easy to have a violent revolution and kill everyone when the other side can't defend itself. So
yeah,
hopefully we'll always have that amendment, that Second Amendment, and we'll keep our firearms.
Indeed, indeed. All right, good points. Anything else?
No, nope, that's all.
Thank you. All right, folks, it is important to fight for the Second Amendment. Good call, Aaron. I want to just throw out one other thing, because you can hear some of these terms and they don't really stick to your brain because they're in a foreign language. You've never heard them before, that type of thing. There's certain ideas, though, to hang on to And Marx got his basic structure of his ideas from a guy by the name of Hegel. And in Hegel, there was this inevitable process that happens in history that it goes to more and more organization and sophistication. This is what these people believe. They think if there was a violent overthrow, that the society would naturally evolve upwards. It would get better and better. And so there is another movement in Marxism and leftism that they would take over by slow means, and which I won't get into today. But I'm just saying that it's essentially a violent movement because it's kind of unhinged from the Western history from any rules. So anything that you could do that would cause, you know, the society to get overturned and benefit leftism, it's good to go with. Now, here is Trump. Here, pardon me, Gingrich. Trump represents the end of the left's world.
Author of the new book, Understanding Trump, which is to be out soon. Fox News, former Speaker of the House, Fox News contributor Newt Gingrich. There is such a huge divide. I don't think in my lifetime, and you were hated, by the way. I remember the Gingrich that stole Christmas, Time, Newsweek. You went through an awful lot and a lot of battles with the media, but frankly, it seems like kindergarten compared to how vicious this effort to take him down, delegitimize him is. Is there a comparison? Did you live through this? Do you have a sense of what he's going through? And where does this end?
Oh, I think I have a little sense of what he's going through. And certainly it was true that, you know, when Time magazine had me on the cover as the Grinch that stole Christmas, and the following week I was a Dr. Seuss figure and on Newsweek. I mean, there's the whole sense of attacking from that's before we were sworn in, by the way. But I think this is different and deeper for this reason. Donald J. Trump represents the end of their world. The people he was talking to in Pennsylvania are people who really want to go back to core American values. They're fed up with the Hollywood left. They're fed up with left-wing academics brainwashing their children. They're fed up with the New York Times and the Washington Post and CBS and NBC and ABC. And they know it. They understand what the game is. And the result is that with Trump having won the presidency, he's in a position to pretty consistently move the country away from the left-wing values that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were trying to impose on all of us. And I think that that leads to what is a genuine, I think, cultural civil war that's very real. It's very deep. It shows up in riots on campuses. And I think that we should understand that they're deadly earnest. They want us to live a different life. They want to impose their values on us. And they're fully prepared to do anything they can to destroy Trump in order to do that.
You know, I was kind of messing around at the beginning of the show and on my radio show today in terms of, oh, I bet a lot of media probably tuning into me tonight, and maybe I'll address them, maybe I won't. They'll have to wait the hour and see if I do. But what's fascinating to me is just how blatant they are about their bias at this time. You know, from November 9th forward, there has been a full-on attempt to delegitimize this president, spinning wild conspiracies against this president. We were proven to have colluded with this president vis-a-vis WikiLeaks. They never vetted Barack Obama. They never talked about his atrocious record. And to me, I think they feel justified. They don't see anything wrong with what they're doing. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe they do see it, but they don't.
Well, I mean, it's obvious that, you know, it is absolutely obvious that these people think that they're doing, I mean, I would assume everybody understands the far left. There is no God in leftism, but the government is God. And here's something interesting that it had been mentioned by Aristotle that to study the beginning of something is to gain deep understanding of it. And when Spinoza, who was this kind of strange guy living in Amsterdam, who was a lens grinder, he was kicked out of his Jewish temple for being an atheist, and he had written these big works on basically I won't I won't bore you with the details, but he kind of this atheistic system that was kind of running the universe. And he said, basically the universe itself is a God, but he didn't believe in a, you know, he didn't believe in a God that would, for example, put out a book, communicate to people, that God would, you know, give revelation or anything like that, that the typical Jewish or Christian idea or Muslim even. But what he said was, there is no God, but to the extent that there is, the government is his mouthpiece. So he believed in this. Basically, he brought from the ancient world, from Greece and Rome, this idea religion was inside of the government basically a department of the government, and that the government gave the very highest and most enlightened ideals for mankind, which, you know, you could basically say was God. And so that's the, you know, that's indistinguishable from what we see in leftism today. All right, let's take a little break here. 523-1450 AM Las Cruces. We're going to come back and delve into Hillary's pain, her insanity. West Montgomery, Besame Mucho. 523-1450 to call in, 805-618-2 text. And we'll be back. You're going to love this part, this next part.
Kelly, this is Richard. I'm almost in El Paso. I may lose you. What are the results of the Solid Water Conservation District? Do you know?
Yeah, Delk and Thurston both lost.
Well, for being a lifelong New Mexican, I couldn't be happier, because I really believe in our environment, and I think they should just worry about their district.
You should. When are you going to be out of range?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
When are you going to be out of range? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I'm in and out. I'm almost in El Paso.
Did you want to say something on the air?
Well, did I watch it? Yeah, I watched the KRWG.
No. Did you?
Interview where they didn't Richard, show up for it.
Richard, did you want to say something on the air?
Have you ever been here?
Hello? I just got a call from Richard, who asked who won the soil and water conservation district positions, and I told him that Bixby and Fenske had won, and he said good, and he was kind of fading out of range, but I said, well, he's driving down to El Paso, so I said, well, did you want to, you know, come on the air and talk about it? And he couldn't really hear me. I think he was just losing connection with his phone or whatever. But, and Richard, you probably can't hear me now if you're down in El Paso, but you're more than welcome to call back. But one of the things that he mentioned was that he's a lifelong New Mexican, and that we need, you know, he's very conservation oriented. And also that he mentioned that the, you know, Delk and Thornton didn't make it to the KRWG. Is that the right call numbers? They didn't make it to the local debate, and so he knew about that. And maybe, you know, it is possible that these people, these guys who, and I know Delk, I really don't know. I didn't know the other young man was somebody that was new, but it's possible that they would have lost anyway, because there was a big KRWG. There was a big turnout for, you know, the left had the Progressive Voter Alliance had gotten a lot of people out. But so, you know, it might have been one of these situations where there's so much unrest in a certain political party that they got all, you know, as many people out as they could, which was ironically about 5%. But here, you know, I'll just throw this out to you. If you are an environmentalist, you know, somebody like Richard, who just called in, he sees himself as an environmentalist. And he said, when I told him that, you know, the far left had basically won in that race, he said, good, people need to mind their own district. And so here's the question, and there's, you know, we can talk about it from now until doomsday, but if you were in interested in environmentalism, devoted to it, how do you define that, number one? And number two, what is the best way to achieve the goals? And is there such a thing as enlightened versus unenlightened environmentalism? And so, all right. Now, here is, switching gears a little bit, here is, and I've got a cue my, I got a bunch of clips to, million-dollar clips here, but here's Hillary.
It wasn't a perfect campaign. There is no such thing. But I was on the way to winning until the combination of Jim Comey's letter on October 28th and Russian WikiLeaks raised doubts in the minds of people who were inclined to vote for me but got scared off. And the evidence for that intervening event is, I think, compelling, persuasive. And so we overcame a lot. equivalency and so much else.
All right, let me play this clip over for you because you can't. This little experiment here, Hollywood style, the sound effects for our beloved almost president. Here we go, Hillary.
It wasn't a perfect campaign. There is no such thing. But I was on the way to winning until the combination of Jim Comey's letter on October 28th and Russian WikiLeaks raised doubts in the minds of people who were inclined to vote for me but got scared off. And the evidence for that intervening event is, I think, compelling, persuasive. And so we overcame a lot in the campaign. We overcame an enormous barrage of negativity, of false equivalency, and so much else. But
I hate to interrupt an important person while she's talking, but what exactly did she overcome? She totally tripped herself.
As Nate Silver, who you know, doesn't work for me, he's an independent.
Nate Silver was a guy that predicted the rise of Obama. He worked at the New York Times until he had a falling out. Now he's got his own site. I'm trying to remember. It's numbers 857 or whatever his site is.
Didn't analyst, but one considered to be very reliable, you know, has concluded, you know, if the election had been on October 27th, I'd be your president. And it wasn't. It was on October 28th. And there was just a lot of funny business going on around that. And ask yourself this, within an hour or two of the Hollywood access tape being made public, the Russian theft of John Podesta's emails hit WikiLeaks. So, I mean, you just can't make this stuff up. So, did we make mistakes? Of course we did. Did I make mistakes? Oh my gosh, yes. You know, you'll read my confession and my request for absolution. But the reason why I believe we lost were the intervening events in the last 10 days. And I think you can see I was leading in the early vote. I had a very strong, not just our polling and data analysis, but a very strong assessment going on across the country about where I was in terms of, you know, the necessary both votes and electoral votes.
Too many sound effects to use, but poor baby, you know, she really deserved to be treated better. But I don't see how you're Hillary and don't conclude that you totally screwed yourself over. And here's a little bit from Newt Gingrich on her continuing navel gazing and blaming.
Which joins us. He is also Fox News political contributor and author of the new book, Understanding Trump, which we will ask him about in just a moment. Good to see you this evening, Newt. You know, it was very interesting listening to Hillary Clinton. And as you can see in that timestamp, she said in one moment, I take full responsibility for what happened. And then the next moment, she says, well, I would have won if it weren't for Comey and WikiLeaks. Do you think that she has learned the lessons that everyone else seems to have taken away, or many people took away, from this election?
No, it's interesting. I'm reading Shattered, which I frankly was doubtful about, but it's like watching a car wreck in slow motion. She can't come to grips with reality. She can't come to, you know, and over again in this book, they point out that none of her staff can tell her the truth. The number one problem of the Hillary Clinton campaign was Hillary Clinton. And in the end, she couldn't win a race that they all thought was going to be easy. Now, the number two problem, let's be clear, was Donald J. Trump, who turned out to be an amazingly better candidate than any Democrat thought he could be, and who understood that if he really did his best in western Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in northern Michigan, and in Wisconsin, that he was going to be president. So he won, she lost, and it's kind of sad to watch her repeat this somebody else made me do it kind of analysis.
You know, I mean, lessons learned will not be very effective for Democrats if they don't look at things like the number that we showed our viewers last night, which was that 42% of the people who went from Obama to Trump said that they think they now look at the Democrat Party as the party of the wealthy, the party of the elite, and that it doesn't speak to them. I mean, to me, if Hillary Clinton were expressing those kinds of facts that have now come out, Democrats could become quite viable in the near future.
Well, all right, so let's take a break and get some local news. 523-1450 and 805-6180 on AM Las Cruces, 731. All right, so Hillary lost, and she's still struggling to come to grips with that. Now, I had mentioned for you something that I was very impressed by, a conversation by Richard Dreyfuss with Tucker. And Tucker is the new Bill O'Reilly without the obnoxious, I guess, elements. He's a lot smoother. But Richard Dreyfuss was listening to the show and sent an email, and Tucker brought him on to talk about civics as an answer to the nation's problems.
So last Tuesday, we had on Santa Clara County Councilman David Cortese to debate the legality of President Trump's executive order concerning sanctuary cities. It was an energetic debate. I'd like you to answer my question, which is a very simple one. There's a precedent being set here by a federal judge that states do not have to comply with federal law and can't be punished for not doing so. That is a major departure from where we've been for my whole lifetime. Do you think that the Obama administration was right to threaten a withholding of federal funds from states that didn't comply with its transgender bathroom laws? That's orders. That's a really simple question.
I'm telling you that this is the first president of the United States that's threatened with an executive order to withhold, in our case, up to $1.7 billion from us. It's unconstitutional for him to try to wield that kind of power. The federal court agreed with us today.
That's not true. You're never quite sure who's watching when you do a segment like that. But in that case, one person who was Richard Dreyfuss, the Oscar winner from Jaws and scores of other movies. I was actually in bed doing email, and I got one from him And I thought, that can't really be Richard Dreyfuss, but it actually was. He said, I want to come on, and he wrote this, quote, I would be happy to come on your show and explain this rudimentary illustration of the basic checks and balances to you and your audience. That sounded great. We are always happy to promote civic knowledge on this show. We're happy to have Richard Dreyfuss with us tonight. Richard Dreyfuss, thanks for joining us.
How you doing?
So I'm doing great. So I know you spent time at Oxford studying this, civics. I know you know a lot about the Constitution. I don't doubt that. I know you're smart. But where in the Constitution does it say states can do whatever they want?
I believe another program just kicked in. I was doing some research on David Horowitz coming to town. I was going to see if I could meet the guy. Here's Richard Dreyfuss.
Studying this, civics. I know you know a lot about the Constitution. I don't doubt that. I know you're smart. But where in the Constitution does it say states can do whatever they want in contravention of federal law and the rest of us have to be quiet and pay for it anyway?
It doesn't say that. It only simply says that the monies attached to things that the executive might want are right. The province of the Congress. And that what was said in the judge's ruling was that the executive didn't have the power to withhold finances because that's the province of the Congress. And that's all I wanted to clarify, because it is, as you say, a very rudimentary thing. And we should all know a hell of a lot more than that. And I want to mention, because I know I'm limited to 6 minutes, I want to mention one thing. The next night, you were talking about the speakers on university campuses.
Yeah.
And I am totally, incontrovertibly on your side about this. I think that any intrusion into the freedom of speech is an intrusion into freedom of speech. And when one of the presidents of one of the colleges said, this is a school, not a battlefield, I said, no, it is a battlefield of ideas, and we must have dissenting opinions on campuses. And I think it's political correctness taken to a nightmarish point of view.
Well, amen. And I agree with you, and maybe because we're both over 30. Unfortunately, most people under 30 don't seem to agree with us at all, and they believe in something called hate speech, which is somehow banned because they don't know what the Constitution says. But I want to get back to the first point really quick. I mean, this is a legal debate, and this is probably not the best forum for it, but let me just ask you a political question. I know for certain that this kind of thing has been threatened by many presidents before, because I've seen it, and administrations often get states to do what they want them to do by threatening to withhold money. This happened less than a year ago in May of 2016 when the Obama administration threatened to withhold federal funds from North Carolina over the famous bathroom controversy. I don't remember any federal judge saying, well, you're not allowed to do that. Why?
Well, I have to beg off part of this discussion because I have withdrawn from partisan politics. I am a constitutionalist who believes that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights must be central and the parties must be peripheral. And
well,
I think
for you.
What's most important for me is what you just mentioned haphazardly. We're over 30. Civics has not been taught in the American public school system since 1970. And that means that everyone in Congress never studied the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as you and I might have. And that is a critical flaw, because it's why we were admired and respected for so long. It gives us our national identity. It tells the world who we are and why we are who we are. And without a frame that gives us the values that stand behind the Bill of Rights, we're just floating in air, and our sectors of society are not connected.
Well,
and
that's exactly
why
right.
Teaching civics, and I'm so glad you said that, because what's really important, Tucker, is that the assumptions of the left and the right are all skewed wrong. We have to find areas of agreement and areas that we share. And we do share the notion that education accomplishes certain things. One, it turns students into citizens.
Right.
And two, it teaches students how to run the country before it's their turn to run the country. And three, it teaches the values of this nation. People come from all over the world or are born into this nation without the values that we have here. That's why they came here, to get them. And what are they? You can put them in opportunity, rise by merit, and mobility and freedom. That's what we sell. And if you don't want that, you've chosen the wrong place. And you don't get a pass by being born here. You have to learn it. Even the Ten Commandments are not known at birth. You must learn them. And we must learn our values. And if we don't, we are fatally, fatally wounding ourselves. We will not have any way to really combat the ideas behind ISIS, because we won't know our own. And we have to.
So you know, typically I interrupt our guests and I expected to debate you, but that was, I agree with every single word of that. And I just want to say thank you very much for coming, for emailing me late night, and for coming on to say that, because I think it's important. And I hope that people watch.
Can
this.
I give you one idea? Can I give you one idea?
Give me one quick idea.
For everybody. Okay. Everyone knows the preamble to the Constitution, or should. And the preamble is meant, is in fact the mandate of the, of America. And I say, if every parent and teacher and school superintendent and public political commentator signed the preamble as a gesture of support for the demand to bring civics back to the grades below high school graduation, I'll call a civic strike, and we will get the attention of all the people that deserve to pay attention.
That is a great
point.
We'll
get it back.
If you do that, I hope you'll come on to tell us how you're spreading that idea.
I'm doing it. People can go to my website, which is thedreyfusinitiative.org, and it's on the website. Sign the preamble.
Done.
Brilliant, huh? Take a break here, and then we'll come back and see what else I have for you. Man, I've got so many different... Well, all right, I'll just surprise you. Kelly O'Connelly and Les Cruz, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180. Civics, the power of civics. All right, I found a really bizarre story that I wanted to share with you. Ex-FBI translator marries ISIS fighter. She was ordered to investigate, court documents show. It's absolutely surreal. Not only that, the guy was a rapper. And we do have a phone call. It must be Bob. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Dave.
David, what's up?
Hey, Kelly, I just wanted to let you folks know, and maybe the listeners out there, that tonight at New Mexico State University on campus, sponsored by the Students for Academic Freedom, a nonpartisan group, David Horowitz is going to speak tonight at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I was just looking at that, as a matter of fact, and when you called in.
Okay.
I just think... he's the best. I played a clip from him the other day. He put into two words the religious element of leftism better than any person that I've ever heard before. And he's absolutely brilliant. He was the editor of Ramparts, which was the most important journal of leftism during the 1960s. And he made a complete 180 and became a conservative, and has been leading from the front ever since.
Wow, that's great. I'm looking forward to tonight's meeting. And I hope a lot of both sides would go to listen. And
hey,
maybe
David,
we can...
David, yes, that room only holds 100 people. It's a tragedy that they would bring such an eminent person at such an important time and stick him in such a small room.
Yeah, but if we get enough turnout, they can be outside. Who cares? Maybe we can set up speakers or something. At least it'll show that people want to hear what he has to say. And maybe the next time they ask him back, they can have the Pan Am Center, which can hold, I don't know, thousands.
Yeah, but just remember, this is a guy whose parents were communists, basically. He was raised from inception to believe in these ideas, and he was completely disillusioned and broke with leftism. And he was a great person in the left until he broke. He was very important, you know.
Well, it's so important to hear somebody that knows it from both sides. Then I can't wait for tonight.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's at the Gerald Thomas Hall, room 194, at 7 p.m. Obviously, get there right. A little bit early.
That's it. I'm going to get there at 7. I think they start at 7:15, but I'm going to get there earlier. So.
All right, David. Thanks for the call. Have a good day.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. Here is this weird story on this translator. Hold on a second here. This is from Fox.
On a bizarre story that really does sound like something straight out of Homeland or a terrorism movie, it's an FBI translator who was investigating an ISIS fighter in 2014 and then fled the United States for Syria and married him. So why are we just finding out about this breach? Chief Intelligence Correspondent Catherine Herridge digging into this unbelievable story. Catherine.
Well, thank you, Martha. It's hard to explain why any woman would get involved with ISIS, but tonight the Republican chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee says that's exactly what happened with a federal investigator.
We just had an FBI agent, female FBI agent, who, was having an affair with an ISIS operative. That kind of shows you the strangeness, how somebody could be attracted to a figure like that in ISIS. And that FBI case is very disturbing to me.
Newly unsealed court records, first reported by CNN and independently confirmed by Fox News, show an FBI translator married this German rapper turned ISIS pitchman Dennis Cuthbert in 2014. The FBI contractor Daniela Green was investigating Cuthbert when she lied to supervisors and traveled from the U.S. to Turkey and across the border to ISIS-held territory. Green, who still had an American husband at the time, wrote in emails that life in the ISIS caliphate was frightening, dangerous, and she might not survive. And she even believed she would go to jail if she ever got out alive. These records filed here in D.C. say Green's conduct was a serious breach. The U.S. attorney wrote that Green had, quote, violated the public trust, the trust of the officials who granted her security clearance, and the trust of those with whom she worked, and in doing so endangered our nation's security. The case got zero publicity for months because the records were sealed by the court, and critics say Green got off with a light sentence, 2 years in probation, because she cooperated with the FBI. A bureau spokesman would only say they've made policy changes to avoid a repeat in the future, Martha.
Catherine, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Joining me now, Pete Hoekstra, the former chairman of the House Intel.
Well, anyway, that's the basics of the story. She was married when she started tracking this guy and obviously fell in love with him. Wow, so incredible. But the FBI doesn't have any problems, of course. Reminds me of this bizarre story, one of the weirdest stories that I have ever seen. This lady who was at Rutgers, which is the University of New Jersey and the state university, and she was the head of the philosophy department, and she ended up falling in love and having an affair with a guy that was profoundly handicapped. And so and she had been married at the time. She had an affair with this guy, and then her husband ended up leaving her, and she ended up getting, she told the family they were having, and I think he was, he had some sort of a handicap to where she was prosecuted, and they said that he could not have possibly, he could have not have consented because he didn't, you know. So anyway, she got prosecuted for rape, and just one of the weirdest stories I've ever read. I mean, one odd thing after another. We'll come back and hear a little more Bergazzi. Bit more, Nate Bergazzi, you were there.
I went to community college for 1 year. Dude, yeah, a couple of us, just me and this guy. Did you go for longer than a year or 1 year, 2 years? Or did you go to real college? Couple years. Oh, all right. Valedictorian over here. Yeah. I made it one. And what's even more embarrassing that I do not have a credit. Literally, I do not have, I have zero credits. Do you have credits? You got credits, like all of them? Did you graduate community college? You think you're better than me? No, I just started to say, he's like, I don't know. It's easy, I think, to graduate. Like, I, you know, my loan was $40. I just paid cash. That's all. I was like, this is good. He's like, that's more than enough. I was all remedial classes, which remedial, you know, it's like, they don't count. None of them count. So all my classes were outside. Everyone was outside. We wouldn't even meet inside the building. We would just meet at a picnic table outside because our teacher was like, well, you guys will all be working outside. We're going to teach you about weather, you know, and like we're going to teach you about morning dew, how to get your socks wet. You'll be getting up pretty early the rest of your life. I hope you guys like sunrises because you're going to see a lot of them. That's what remedial classes are for. They're a heads up that you're going to do manual labor. The assignments, our teacher's like, all right, so today's assignment is we're going to help me move. So, I think that's the requirements for community college is like, you got to have a car and like live in your parents' house still. Like, or your kids move out of your house. Like, that's the other thing. Like, kids, like, it's just in remedial, too. It's like, I'm just with old people that are, like, you know, I don't know. They're, like, you're mad at them because they're asking all these questions. You're like, quit asking questions, all right? I'm trying to do what you did when you were 18. So don't come ruin it for me.
All right. And here is Trump playing nice with little Kim.
What do you make of the North Korean leader? I really have no comment on him. People are saying, is he sane? I have no idea. I can tell you this, and a lot of people don't like when I say it, but he was a young man of 26 or 27 when he took over from his father, when his father died. He's dealing with obviously very tough people, in particular the generals and others. And at a very young age, he was able to assume power. A lot of people, I'm sure, tried to take that power away, whether it was his uncle or anybody else. And he was able to do it. So obviously he's a pretty smart cookie, but we have a situation that we just cannot let. We cannot let what's been going on for a long period of years continue.
He's a smart cookie. He's trying to butter him up. He's trying to turn him into a butter cookie, which is wholly appropriate for a fat little Kim. All right. Thanks for tuning in. And, enjoyed spending some time with you as always. And don't forget the Horowitz thing at 7 p.m. on campus. It should be interesting. There should be at least 100 people listening that would enjoy that. The guy's absolutely brilliant. And 7:59, I will take you out with some beautiful West Montgomery. Besame mucho. Have a great day. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450 on KOBE, Kelly O'Connell. Ciao. The people.